Hi everyone, this is Stephanie Wu and welcome to the fourth session of the Master's Course. I've been talking and emailing with some of you and it seems that a lot of people when it comes to the observation assignment is feeling like observing for 25 hours is a really long time. And I just want to reassure all of you that you are right, it is. I know that you are all very busy every day. Some of you are full-time parents. Some of you have full-time jobs. So I really understand that time is very precious to you. I simply hope that you will start the work and do as much as you can. It might be that you start with observing your baby while he's sleeping. You know, that could be a place to start. Or you may simply start with indirect observation, which is to observe and then just write down what you remember later on when you have time. Any amount of time you set aside as observation time is very precious and just really great. It's very different from just being with your children because there's a different kind of intention when you're observing and when you're just being with your children. You know, like when you're just being with your children, you're just there, you're automatically kind of being yourself, okay? But when you're choosing to observe, you know, you're saying, right now, I'm going to put my own thoughts, judgments, ideas aside, and I'm going to just watch what's happening in front of me in an objective way. I'm going to be like a fly on the wall. So in a way, you become smaller. And when that happens, the child, I mean, who the child really is, can then be revealed. Another point I want to invite you to think about is that if any of you are experiencing any kind of difficulty in an area, whether it's sleeping, movement, eating, etc., or if you find that the baby is crying a lot at certain times and it's like confusing or puzzling for you and you just don't know why it's happening, then it's the perfect time to ask someone else to take care of the baby so that you can sit back and watch what is happening. Okay. It's, you know, like I'm a consultant and so I work with lots of families. And what I do is simply that I just watch babies, you know, I just observe to see what is happening. And so once you've had a lot of experience with observing, you can see certain things, perhaps, you know, that someone who has had less time observing has. But regardless, it really, at the end of the day, you know, true, if you talk about what's Montessori, you know, true Montessori is observing, you know, is developing the capacity and the ability to observe objectively and, you know, interpret what you're seeing. So, you know, so when you're watch, you know, really watch, you know, try not to, you know, make your presence small. You know, don't have your presence be felt in the space too much. That way you can really see, what's happening. And perhaps you can find a clue to what is happening and why it's happening. Okay? So I hope that addresses some of your questions about observations. So today I want to talk about freedom and discipline. It's truly one of my favorite topics in Montessori, and it's something I think most people are confused about, frankly. You know, so today we're going to be talking what may seem like an older child here, okay? Because oftentimes it manifests as a child gets older. But the truth is, I don't want you to be thinking, okay, this doesn't apply to me or this has nothing to do with me. You know, I certainly hope that you'll continue to listen because, first of all, it will apply to you before you know it, right? Time really does fly and the child does grow old, you know, become older before you know it. You're going to have toddlers on your hands, you know. But mainly because what I'm going to talk about today, it starts right now. It doesn't start in 3 years. You know, if you start in 3 years, it's a little bit late. You know, if you start right now, you're really planting the seeds very early on, and it's just very beneficial for everybody. And you know, as I talk more, you'll see what I mean. So So the concept of freedom and discipline is really at the very heart of our work with children. It is our understanding of these two ideas, perhaps more than any other, which ultimately determines the degree to which we're able to support a child's development. So our experience and understanding of freedom and discipline, it affects everything. It affects our observations, our interpretations, the way we respond to children. It affects how we prepare our home, our daily interactions with children, and even our happiness and being with children. So our attitude towards freedom and discipline cuts right to the core of our deepest motivations. Why do we respond to a child the way we do? You know, are we adults who will support a child's development or thwart it? Are we able to replace, you know, our own pride and anger with patience and humility? So freedom and discipline forces us to examine the social, emotional, and cognitive reasons for why we make the choices that we do. So I'm going to start today by talking about the conventional ideas of freedom and discipline. Okay, so let's start with discipline. When you guys hear the word discipline, what do you hear? Think about it for a second, right? Usually it's connected to behavior, right? So the idea generally focuses on the question, you know, how do we get children to behave? So discipline might be something like, you know, putting a child in time out or being sent to your room or, you know, to stand or, you know, being sent to the corner, stand in the corner. You know, or it might be that, you know, you lose dessert privileges or you lose TV privileges. You know, at school, when we were little, we were sent to the office or we had to put our head down on the desk. And this is a new one that I just learned recently, that there are these schools where children begin each day in the green, and then with each bad behavior, they start moving to yellow, and then finally they move to red. Okay. So there are all sorts of, you know, ways that we discipline children. So our society's notion of discipline generally means do what the adult says. Listen, you know, follow directions, sit still, be quiet. And when the child doesn't behave, then we take all sorts of disciplinary steps, right? So this discipline happens usually when the adult is angry or frustrated that the child won't do what he says. So pride enters into it as well. Like, I'm the adult. You've got to listen to me. Okay? So Montessori wrote, what is generally known as discipline in traditional schools is not activity, but immobility and silence. It is not discipline, but something which festers inside a child, arousing his rebellious feelings. So the truth is, this is the way most of us were brought up. You know, I know I was, and it's still very prevalent today. Even though I think with modern parenting, we want to parent differently, but because we haven't shifted our ideas of what discipline is, so when you're faced with bad behavior, this is what you end up doing, okay? So Montessori says this, as far as child psychology is concerned, we are more prejudiced than wise. Up until now, we have wanted to dominate children externally with the rod instead of guiding them inwardly like human beings. This is why they have passed close by us without our being able to know them. But if we set aside the tricks with which we tried to ensnare them and the violence which we took for discipline, they reveal themselves to us. So now let's talk about freedom, right? So what does our society understand about the idea of freedom? Freedom means you get to do whatever you want, right? Freedom's like the opposite of discipline. Children, they have to follow our rules until they're 18, and then they're free to do whatever they want. So what we often see is that, you know, 18-year-olds, when they're finally free to do whatever they want, what do? They do drugs. They do binge drinking, they skip class, right? I mean, this even happens as early as, you know, high school or even middle school. I mean, even elementary school students, you know, at 3 o'clock, they rush out of the school building because they're finally free from, you know, the discipline of being in school, right? You know, and And nowadays, you know, parents are very big on play. You know, can't we just let the children play? Can't we just let the kids be kids and let them be free? You know, right? So modern parenting, you know, we're trying to not be the strict parents that our parents were. And instead, we want to let their children be free. Okay? So we want to give them freedom. We don't want to burden them with rules or responsibilities. Okay? Likewise, I've seen many preschools and kindergarten teachers who will tell you, oh, their philosophy is to follow the child's lead and let the child guide the learning process with their own interests. I mean, it sounds a lot like Montessori because we also use the term follow the child, right? But in reality, okay, what we see with a lot of these preschool and these kindergarten, the children who go there or with parents who, you know, who just want to let their children be free, is that we see children who are out of control. And they're like where homes and classrooms are just like chaotic and the children are bouncing off the walls. It's like a free for all. Okay. I mean, is this the true nature of children? Okay, I mean, really, the parents and the teachers have followed the child right over the cliff, right? And what happens is everyone is left frustrated and they end up resorting to the same kind of discipline that they swore they would never use. So then where does this leave us, right? I mean, we're very confused, truly, about what is freedom and what is discipline. And the truth is, our ideas are very much conflicted with everything we've been learning about Montessori's discovery of the true nature of childhood. So we think of freedom and discipline as something we have to do to the children. We discipline children. We give them freedom. What are the children? They're just passive, you know, because the power rests with the adult. Now, this is the exact paradigm we have to address, because conventional thinking about freedom and discipline doesn't work. We have to change our definition of freedom and discipline. So now let's look at how Montessori thought of discipline. Montessori was not interested in adults imposing discipline on children. She was much more interested in helping the child develop his own self-discipline. She always saw discipline as a force within the child. So when the adult forces the child to be silent or obedient, you know, the child is passive and the adult's will dominates the child. And that's not discipline. What we want is we want discipline to be active. A child is disciplined when he's a master of himself and he's able to control himself when he needs to. Okay? This is the kind of discipline we strive to support in the child. So the word discipline comes from the Latin word disciplina, and that means to teach, to instruct, to educate. Okay, similar words are words like the word disciple, which means like a student or a trainee, or like the word to discern, which is to learn, to get to know. So it's really fascinating that the word discipline and discern are related words. It means that discipline is a process of coming to know, a process of learning, a process of development. So Montessori thought about developing discipline as really no different than developing, let's say, movement, okay? Movement is a process you master through learning and developing, okay? So the child, you know, when he's born, he doesn't have movement, but he has the potential to develop movement. And then when the potential for movement is supported, every child can follow a predictable pattern of development, right? As long as he gets lots of opportunities to practice, he can develop movement, okay? And then the goal of developing movement is to prepare the child for life and for independent action. Consider that discipline is exactly the same. The child is not born with discipline, but he has the potential to develop discipline. And when the potential for discipline is supported, every child follows a predictable pattern of development as long as he has opportunities to practice. And the goals of developing discipline is also to prepare the child for life and independent action. So developing discipline is just like developing movement. You know, You give them lots of opportunities to practice, and then they follow this very predictable pattern, and it prepares them, you know, for life. So, another way how they're very similar is that when you're developing movement, you follow certain laws. Okay, so every child has to go through the same muscular and neurological development before, you know, they can reach out and grasp things, or before he can crawl and walk. Okay, and it's the same for babies all over the world. When it comes to developing inner discipline, there are also internal laws. So Montessori says that there exists a universal inborn discipline within every human being. Every infant is governed by a set of laws or internal discipline. This is their universal developmental plan. Every child, when he's born, he has a plan inside of him already. Okay? And so our job is just to guide that plan, help it manifest itself. Okay? And the child, he's assisted by his absorbent mind, his sensitive period for order and movement and language and sensory perceptions. You know, these are the laws that form the inner discipline of the child. So for example, okay, let's say one day, you looked up the Weather Channel and you saw that it's going to rain, and you want your child to wear a raincoat. But his sense of order is upset because, you know, he's like, I don't want to wear a raincoat. You know, it's not raining. Right? So we see that the child is upset. Okay. He's maybe throwing a tantrum. It's a bad behavior. Okay. But what's really happened is his inner discipline is disrupted. Okay. His inner sense of order is disrupted. So how do we respond to this? Do we let our anger and pride control our responses and we force the child to wear the coat? You know, do we punish the child for throwing a tantrum? Or do we respond by understanding that the child's inner developmental laws is upset? And we respond with patience and humility and say, you're right. You know, you don't, the weatherman says it's going to rain later, you know, but, you know, you don't have to wear it now as long as you take it with you. Okay. So if we can help the child, if we ourselves can understand that the way we help a child develop discipline is the same way we help him develop movement, then we can really give him the help that he needs. Okay? So I want to move on and talk a little bit about freedom. Okay, so what is freedom? It's very different. Our Montessori definition of freedom is very different from the conventional understanding of letting the child do whatever he wants. Okay, so we can define freedom as this. I love this, right? So freedom, you should write this down, is the capacity to pause and make a specific choice to the exclusion of all other possible choices. So freedom is the capacity to pause, to stop for a second and make a choice, okay? And say, I'm going to choose this choice and I'm not going to choose any of the other choices. That's freedom. So another way to think of freedom is the ability to choose a reasoned path, like the reasoned path, like this is the path that I'm going to choose because it's the reasonable path to take. So both of these definitions consider freedom as an ability, like a capacity that's independent of, you know, external forces. So freedom is an internal state. So much like discipline, freedom cannot be given and it cannot be forced because it comes from within. So let me give you an example. So Brooke and Mackenzie, you know, they're now 3.5 and they started summer school recently. And the first 2 days, they really didn't want to go. And Brooke says, if you take me to school, I'm going to start crying. And lo and behold, she did. And then 2 days later, after she started to really like the school, in the morning she would tell me, when you take me to school, I won't cry. And if you leave me at the front door, I'll walk in by myself. So she has the inner freedom to choose her responses. Do I cry? Do I act out? Or do I not? So with younger children, they can't quite express it like a more verbal child can. But slowly through this process that we're talking about, they can develop the freedom to make specific choices, okay, to the exclusion of other choices. So freedom and discipline both are active processes that are developed through the child's own activity and his own effort. It's very different from the idea of freedom just letting children do whatever they want. You know, Montessori says, actually I'm paraphrasing here, that if we just let the child do whatever he wants, then the only thing that will be allowed to grow are his deviations. This is why in many traditional preschools, when teachers give children freedom, like they think they're supposed to, and they quote unquote follow the child, all they do is they see chaos. Okay? So self-discipline and freedom are these two active processes that the child will construct through his own effort. But how does freedom and discipline develop? So freedom and discipline develop through something called liberty. So a lot of people use liberty and freedom synonymously, but they're very different. So freedom is the capacity to choose, but liberty is to be able to act on a choice. Okay, so freedom is an internal state. You either have the capacity or you don't. But liberty is an external condition. Liberty is given to someone. For example, I can say, okay, I can choose to play the cello and society has granted me the liberty to act on that choice. They say, sure, go ahead, play the cello. But I don't know how to play. So I can't act on this liberty, even though society's granted me this liberty. So in order to act on my choice, I have to develop the independent skill of playing the cello. So maybe a child can, at a certain age, you know, choose what he wants to wear today, for example. He has the capacity, but he's not given the liberty to do so because mom just dresses him every day, you know. So he's developed the capacity, but he doesn't have the liberty. On the other hand, you know, if you give the child the liberty to just walk around the house and eat, you know, whatever he wants, whenever he wants, but he hasn't developed the capacity to pause and say, well, if I run around and eat this peach, right, I will get the rug and the furniture very sticky and dirty. So now I'm going to choose, you know, do I want to get the rug and furniture dirty and sticky, or do I want to sit down to eat? You know, if he hasn't developed that inner discipline to choose, right, the reasoned path, and you give him the liberty to do it, then that doesn't work either. So here we must consider the role of independence, because independence is necessary for freedom. Children must have the independent skills necessary for them to be able to act on their choice. Okay, so independence, what's independence? It's the ability to act for yourself without relying on others. You know, this is at the root of freedom. The child cannot act upon the choices he has made without the independent skills to do so. So the gradual conquest of independence frees the child from his personal limitations to freedom. Okay, so in order to help the child develop the ability to make choices and act on it, we must actually help the child develop independence to act on his own. This is why we teach him to sleep by himself, hopefully through the night where he can soothe himself back to sleep. You know, this is why we teach him to hold a spoon in a cup, serve himself at the table, dress himself, bathe himself. You know, we're doing this to help the child become independent so that he can begin to develop real freedom. Okay? So, moving on, we're going to talk about limits. Okay? So, as you're gradually building up independence, you know, and the child is developing freedom, Montessori is clear that there are also limits. You have to have limits, okay? So just like liberty, limits also come from the adult. So freedom and discipline is something the child develops within himself, but liberty and limits comes from the adult. And the child can only develop as much freedom and discipline as the adult gives him the proper amount of liberty and the proper limits. So when it comes to very young children, limits have to be given according to his developmental needs. You know, I'm going to give you some examples. For example, an 18-month-old you can't expect an 18-month-old to know what he can touch and what he can't touch. If he sees it, he wants to touch it. So if you don't want him to touch it, don't put it where he can see it, okay? Otherwise, he'll be very frustrated. And, you know, if you're just an unknowing parent, you'll think that he's throwing a tantrum. Also, for an 18-month-old, developmentally, he cannot put things away for himself before playing with the next thing, okay? An 18-month-old, how does he know he doesn't want something? By picking it up, he touches it. Oh, I don't want this. He throws it aside. And then he moves on to the next thing. He picks it up. Oh, this is not what I want. And then he throws it aside. So he only knows what he really wants to work with by touching it. And then if he doesn't want it, he throws it aside until he finds the thing that he wants. Okay. So there's some parents who try to impose that their 18-month-old has to put things away before playing with the next thing. If you do that, he'll be very frustrated and so will you. So what do? You just help, you model putting things away for him. Okay. But a 4-year-old, they can do this. You can't expect them to put things away. And you should place a limit where he's not allowed to take out the next toy until he's put away the last toy. Okay? Some other developmentally appropriate limits are sleeping, for example. During nap time, you have to stay in your room, but you don't have to sleep because you can't force someone to sleep. But you can have very clear limits about what he can do during nap time, okay? And developmentally, children need to move and exercise. So if he's bouncing off the walls at home, take him outside where it's appropriate for him to do those things, okay? Also, for this age child, for this young child, limits must be consistent. Now, I would say that this isn't just for the young child. This is really like all across the board, right? So limits should be consistent. For example, if you don't want your child walking around the house eating, then you have to be very clear about that limit. You only eat when you're sitting down. When you stand up, the food gets taken away. Okay? If your child eats at a weaning table, by 10 or 11 months, you'll start to see this kind of behavior. Just the beginning when they're just testing, okay, can I get away with eating away from the table? And if you're consistent with establishing this limit, then your child will know what's what. Okay, so in our house, and this started from way in the very beginning, at 10 months, if you leave the table, the food goes away. And right now, you know, at 3.5, they have no problems with it. And they know. And then on the flip side, if you say, oh, you know, sometimes they can eat at the table, sometimes you say, oh, it's okay, you can have a cookie while you play. Then the pattern you've established is that the child can eat anywhere, anytime, any place. And what that will mean is you probably will have children who eat running around the house. Okay? So like I said, your limits need to be consistent. Okay? At all times. Thirdly, the consequence of any limit you place should be natural and logical. So the best kind of consequence is the kind of consequence that's built in. For example, it's why I like to give children glasses instead of plastic cups, because you don't handle a glass correctly, it will break, okay? Into pieces, yes. And some people get very nervous about that, but I always tell them that, you know, it breaks once and the child experiences the shattering, and the big noise, and, you know, the child, that's how he's going to learn to be much more careful, okay? But the child who never gets to experience that, and he's always given plastic, then he never learns to be careful, because you don't have to be careful with plastic. So the best kind of consequence is the kind that's built in, okay? Now, not every kind of limit is like that. So sometimes the limit has to come from you, right? And for example, you know, a child, if he doesn't wash his hands before a meal, he doesn't get to eat, okay? So the consequences you set, it has to be natural compared to the choice the child has made. See, because you don't wash your hands, you don't get to eat. Very, very natural consequence. You'd actually, you know, and when this happens, you don't have to do any explaining because children, they don't have a reasoning mind, the young child. You know, it just needs to be related to the incidents. It needs to be logical for the child to make that, distinction. So, let's see here. Okay, hold on. Okay. And then, and fourthly, limits need to be clearly defined. And in some instances, it needs to be, you know, it needs to be established very quickly. For example, you know, if a child hits you, you know, a young child will hit you. Sometimes it's just, you know, it's just they're just testing. You know, this is just what they do. But you have to react very swiftly, and you just have to, you know, take their hand and say, no hitting. Being very firm, look them in the eye, saying, no hitting. Okay? And sometimes you will need to reiterate that several times. But regardless, the limit needs to be clearly defined and swiftly executed. Okay? So, so limits are just essential to helping the child develop the ability to make choices. Okay? So limits narrow choices. We offer a limited number of activities or choices when we, when starting from when the child is very, very little. Okay. Even now at 6 months or, you know, 9 months, you know, you can ask your child whether they want to wear, you know, the green shirt or the blue shirt. Okay. As they get older, you can ask them, do you want peas or carrots? You know, or you can just offer it to them. You know, do you want to walk next to me or hold my hands? So then the child, they start to practice making choices. And we rarely go beyond two options, okay? Stay with two choices until the child is older, like 3 or 4. You know, for example, when in Montessori, when the child transitions to primary, which is from the 3 to 6 class, that's when we start to offer him maybe the third choice, okay? And then after a while, he can move on to a fourth choice. And usually the fourth choice is, you can do shoe polishing, you can do maps, you can do puzzles, or do you have an idea what you would like to do? So that fourth option really helps train the child in what are my choices, okay? So we have to help children make choices, give them opportunities to make choices from a very young age, okay? So working hand in hand with limits are consequences. So consequences gives us feedback about the choices that we've made. When I choose to carry many things at once, I will drop them. You know, if I choose to stay out late at night, I'm going to be tired the next day. If I choose to do my homework tonight, then I'll have more time the weekend, you know, this weekend. So to have real freedom, we have to be able to consider the consequences of our choice, and we have to be able to accept them, okay? So that's, you know, that's responsibility. So for the first playing child, the 0 to 6 child who lives in the moment, their understanding of consequences is best when it's real and immediate. Okay? A glass cup, it can break. You know, a bucket filled to the rim will spill when I carry it. You know, if I hit my sister and make her mad, she'll be unhappy with me. So don't hit her, right? If I close the door gently, the door will close very quietly. So consequences give the child the kind of feedback that he needs to make the choices. So in these very simple examples, we can see there's the emergence of self-discipline, independence, and responsibility, right? Because you have to have a control of movement in order to carry that glass cup, in order to carry that full bucket, you know, in order to close the door quietly. So when we give children liberty, what do we see? We see a happy child who can concentrate and eventually become a master of his own freedom and discipline. When children live in an environment where they have low shelves with plenty of interesting materials they can choose to work with when they want to. When they have adults, you know, who are thoughtful enough to create environments, you know, and adults who want to help them become independent, teach them to dress themselves, feed themselves, clean themselves, you know, and let them do all those things without unnecessary interruption. When a child has all of those things, it can induce the deep attention that we really desire called concentration. That's when the body and the mind can work together to develop physical and mental capacities, which can bring the child greater independence and greater freedom. But it's not only freedom that develops when the child concentrates. The body and the mind also work together to develop self-discipline. The body can become a servant to the mind. The body can execute the will of the mind. The child's will, okay, the part of the mind that consciously decides to do something is supported by the physical body's ability to do or not to do what the mind wills. Just like when Brooke says, I'm going to cry, and then the next day says, I'm not going to cry, right? That's a kind of self-discipline. So there's really a blurring between the distinction of what is freedom and what is discipline, because they really work hand in hand, okay? So in an environment where the children have the liberty to develop independence and they have appropriate limits, it can lead them to concentration. So what does all of this mean for you? Okay. So all of you have young babies at home. It starts here. Freedom and discipline can only be attained through a free environment where children can choose what they want to work with, not get interrupted. Okay. So they can develop concentration. And also, critical ingredients are allowing them to become increasingly independent and giving them opportunities to make choices. So when you teach your child to eat at a weaning table, drink from a glass, sleep in a floor bed, you know, so they get to decide when to sleep, when to wake up, let them spend tons of time on the movement mat where they're free. You know, we don't tell you to do these things because they're like cool things to do. We tell you to do these things because they really lay the very foundation for your child to begin to develop an inner discipline. You know, we can talk about all those things from a neurological point of view, you know, the developmental implications, etc. But for me personally, none of those things really matter as much as this, to develop inner freedom and inner discipline. So for myself, I've never really considered the real importance of developing freedom, right? Like I never really thought of it that way. I mean, in my educational background, you know, freedom was not something that was developed, that people thought was important to develop, you know. And as I've become an adult, you know, I think I sometimes have a hard time making choices because I didn't have much practice in making them when I was young. And what I find interesting is that many adults I've observed, including myself, you know, they've gotten to the place where they have complete liberty in life, meaning they can choose to do almost anything they want to, but they don't have the freedom within to allow themselves to do those things. So one's life only has as many possibilities as one's level of development in freedom. In other words, if you don't know how to make choices that lead to desirable consequences that are smart and aligned with your own values, then your life will be very limited. That's why teaching choice and freedom is so important. And we need to start young, and we need to continue to foster that within children so that when they reach adulthood, they have this skill down pat. So thank you, everybody. That's it for freedom and discipline. It's I hope that it gives you plenty of food for thought. I hope that it'll give you a better understanding of why we do what we do, because it really helped me. It really helped me know and understand why. So next week, we will be talking about the four developmental crises that children go through between 0 and 3 and how to turn those crises into opportunities. Okay? So thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you guys next week. And please, please remember that I love to hear from you. I would love it if you guys email me with any questions, any concerns, any comments. Okay? All right. Have a great week.